dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, sitting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source code, ISO, RAM, SIP, SIP. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Good evening. Welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 114 for September 20th, 2005. I'm Strom Carlson.
I'm Black Ratchet.
And I'm Dr. Zigman.
Dr. Zigman from the forums and the IRC channel of BinRev. Here this evening with us. Aren't we just honored?
I feel very honored.
Yes.
If you don't know who he is, obviously you don't hang out on the forums, the IRC enough. So come and hang out, damn it.
Yeah, we're all there. We're cool.
I think the real honor is mine. It's a pleasure to get to work with you gentlemen.
God, you're just a kiss ass, aren't you? Anyway, so we have a couple of housekeeping items tonight, and I'd just like to say that the email has once again started to flow, much like the spice.
Yes.
Spice has started to flow, and the email started to flow, and the email is the lifeblood. And, of course, all of the emails this week were all about Strom's question with iPods, and it's going to be a very, very kind of bland email this week, so...
iPod-centric.
Yeah, I expected like at least one person to say, oh, hey, you forgot about meeting X, or, oh, you should really look into this group or something. But nope, not a bloody thing. It was all about Strom's iPod scratches.
I feel just honored that the masses are so concerned about my iPod.
Yeah, my iPod has scratches on it. I just don't complain about it like you do. Oh, my iPod has scratches on it.
You guys have a contract with iPod now? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. iPod, the official digital music player thingy of BinRev Radio or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're gonna redo the BinRev logo. It's going to be all white
and
have a nice matte finish to it.
Well, no, it'll be white and it'll be kind of glossy with that, like, as if there's a light on it from an angle type of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And as soon as you look at it, you will want to buy it. Sorry?
Yeah, I like Zigman. Zigman's talking about we can start doing commercials. We can have BinRev Radio commercials.
Oh, yeah, with, like, a pink background and people listening to BinRev Radio in silhouette.
No, I was thinking more of Zigman and for Hack TV. Hi, I'm Dr. Zigman.
Oh, cool.
Are you sick and tired of Kevin Rose?
No offense meant, Kevin.
No comment. So I understand, Strom, that you've been someplace this weekend.
Oh, yes. I went to see Cat Sex the Musical. I went to TourCon in San Diego. That was...
What is TourCon? I've previously, up until you mentioned, I've never heard about it.
It's one of the... I guess one of the larger, smaller conventions, if this is in Southern California. There were two tracks of talks. There was a seminar session on Friday, which I didn't attend because that cost even more. And there was a vendor area, and there was lots of good stuff. It was really exciting. Met some cool people. Had some good drinks. We, in fact, Microsoft bought everybody all the drinks they cared to drink.
That just seems wrong. So is this like a hacker convention, or is it more?
Yeah.
And Microsoft sponsored it?
Yeah, Microsoft sponsored part of it. The LA
20. So, but you weren't allowed to share drinks, right?
What?
No, man, I'm you better be pretty sober if you want to read that EULA before clicking I agree. That was great.
God, I don't know why that joke never occurred to me.
We could just make tons of bad Microsoft puns with alcohol, couldn't we?
Yes, we could. But no, lots of recognizable faces were there. The Schmoop group was there. What's his face? The guy that wrote in Math Theater was there.
The unforgettable What's his face?
Yeah. Nick, Jason Scott was there. I'm sure plenty more underground celebrities who I am failing to mention were there.
Oh. We need someone on the East Coast, man. We got ShmooCon, but we need something in Boston. Come to that conclusion. Well, we do have Vaughn. That's happening this week in Boston. I'll kind of harp upon that upon the announcement section. But for those of you who might be going to Vaughn tomorrow, the VoIP conference in Boston, I will be attending in the expo. I don't know. Drop me an email or send me an IM if you want to get together. I will be there along with a couple other cohorts.
Excellent. We will anxiously await your report on Vaughn next episode.
Yes.
And I'll be at AstraCon in Anaheim sometime next month, so I'll report back from that.
Well,
and if any
of you
are
going, here. Yes, we do. Yes. I'm sorry, we're talking about telephones, everybody. Deal with it.
If you are going to be at AstraCon, send me an email and we'll meet up there or something.
Yeah. Are you going to be making an appearance there, Sigmund?
I'm going to be at Freaknik. Anybody who's going to be going down to that.
Oh, when is Freaknik?
You know what? I know I have the date not exactly right, but it's right around October 21st, in that weekend.
I'll have to start working that into the announcements. I forgot about that. Freaknik is I'm not sure if I can afford to go, but that's something I'm going to have to look into. I'm curious about who else is going to that.
Yeah, I'll have to price it out.
Everyone who says anything about it, they say it's the Real Drinkers Conference.
That's why I'm going.
But I know a bunch of people said they were going to be there. We're going to try to do some segments for Hack TV or something while we're up there. So if you want to be famous, you know, you should definitely make your way over.
It'll be like the Today Show. We'll have Hack TV with like a big glass in the back. Everyone will be having signs saying, "I love you, Stank Dog."
No, I think the
Peoria, Wisconsin says hi to Hack TV.
No, I think the signs will more just be like, "Fear!"
Yeah, but actually, yeah, all these signs will be in Leet speak.
Yeah.
Well, any other places that we're going to be going anytime soon?
I don't think so.
My living room? My living room. I'm going to be in my bedroom sleeping tonight. But anyway. let's go into the email theme.
Our first email is from Digital DD. I assume that's how you pronounce it. Hello, Black Ratchet and Strom Carlson. I forget which of you had scratches on the LCD on their iPod, but I've used toothpaste and a soft bristle toothbrush to remove scratches from the screens on an old U.S. Robotics Palm Pilot, various cell phones, a Toshiba PDA, and also from the plastic display on a DVD player. It doesn't always work, but when it does, what it does is make the large scratches much smaller, so they are barely visible. I wouldn't use this method on a really soft membrane like on many laptop LCDs. I haven't tried it, but something tells me it wouldn't work. The fact is it worked on two PDA touchscreens leads me to believe that it has a pretty good chance of working on the iPod. That's the end of the email.
No. I've heard that work with products with similar consistencies. I don't remember where I heard it, but I do remember hearing the soft bristle toothbrush and some toothpaste.
Recall back in, I think it was middle school, I scratched the screen on my calculator or something, and I was trying to buff it out using toothpaste. And all that happened was I added more scratches to the screen with the toothpaste.
Well, I believe what you have to do is you have to use something with a very fine grit, and it just sort of lodges itself in it lodges itself into the scratch, and it actually works. And there's all kinds of methods to do it. It's a home remedy, that is for sure.
Hmm.
But I guess that if you don't want to do a toothpaste, we can go into the next email from Mr. White. Hey, guys, here's a product I use to get the scratches out of my iPod, and it works great. And it's radtech, R-A-D-T-E-C-H, .us/products.
With a capital P, mind you.
Yeah, I should tiny URL this, shouldn't I?
Yes, you should.
Anyway, radtex.us/product/ice cream, and cream is spelled CREME.ASPX. Now, what do you think about this straw molly tiny URL?
Well, I looked at it, and it looks intriguing. My only real question is whether the results are similar to, or you know, comparable to a factory fresh iPod, like you get right out of the package, or whether if you hold it in the light, you'll notice all these swirly polish marks on it.
Well, honestly, I think with the way it's going, you're never actually going to get a finished brand spanking new looking iPod. I mean, you'll bring it up and it'll work okay, but it's gone. It's not coming back. And actually, on the website, which I am tiny URLing right now, except for some reason my clipboard isn't working correctly. They actually use an iPod right on the site. And it looks pretty good for their before and after shots, but you know, your mileage may vary. But what I liked about it is that they included a bright metal refinishing pad and a couple of polishing cloths, which are, in my opinion, are very handy, especially if you want to ever restore practice plastics. They're very handy to have. And I actually have that tiny URL now, and it's tinyurl.com/75GolfXRayQuebec. So thanks, Mr. White. And, you know, I it's not an official product endorsement. As always, your mileage may vary, blah, 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 blah.
So, yeah, if any of you have actually used this thing, please email us and let us know how it actually works for you.
Yeah. I don't know, Zygmunt, have you ever restored plastics, or is this why you're just kind of staying silent in the back?
Well, the closest I ever came to was I did the toothpaste trick. I've done that plenty of times on different CDs. But I used to do it all the time. It worked really well. And then one day, I decided I was using this new toothpaste. I switched over to Rembrandt, which is not another product endorsement. But Rembrandt has a grit in it. It's like, I don't know if it's like, it's like the equivalent of flavor crystals or whatever it is. So when I finish buffing the CD, I have a nice, healthy, all entirely scratched, ruined CD. So don't ever use Rembrandt. But
take
anything
that, Blink 182.
Anything that's smooth works, and I see those infomercials all the time, you know, where like, oh, your glasses are scratched, spray this magical spray on it. So I don't know how I feel about it. I guess if I saw it work, I'd be impressed. But other than that, you know, I'd be more willing to live with a couple of scratches rather than using a product.
Apparently Strom is OCD enough to care.
Yeah, it's not really that irritating when you hold them to the light. Does it actually look all scratched up? But, you know, it's just one of those things where if it's possible to buff it out, I might as well do it, you know.
Hey, to be honest, if I hold my iPod up to the light, I really don't want to know what it looks like.
If you hold it against the light, it's opaque. That's good enough, right?
Exactly. out of sight, out of mind.
Our next email says, hey, guys. On the most recent edition of Binary Revolution Radio, Black Ratchet, mentioned that he had some scratches on his iPod screen. Well, that was me, not you, but anyway. While I do not own an iPod, I remember seeing an episode of From the Shadows where they polished the scratches out of an iPod and a PSP. It worked surprisingly well. Perhaps this is the solution to your problem. Check it out at fromtheshadows.tv or tinyurl.com/8DMXR for this possession.
That's 8 Delta Mike X-Ray Romeo.
Thank you for the specific episode. Strom and Black Ratchet, I think you guys are doing a great job, and all the freak-related topics gives it a default radio feel at times. This, however, might be a left-handed compliment. P.S. Back on episode 105, Strom stated that he had only appeared on one or two radio shows before BinRev. He forgot to mention the Hacksaw radio show on which there is a show entitled Strom Carlson Freaks Out, pronounced Yawk.
And I got to say, Strom, that's actually the first show I ever listened to you on.
Oh, was it?
Yes, that's the kind of like led me over to here.
Oh, cool. I'm not entirely. I've kind of forgotten the details of what that one was.
It was just a very general show. Actually, all the copies I found like stops after an hour and 20 minutes, and the show officially goes on for like another 20 minutes. So, yeah,
was there anyone on with me? I don't remember.
You, Lucky, Hairball, Johnny Hackers.
Oh my God, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, I don't even remember that. That's like it's over a year. It has to be over a year old.
Oh, over 2 years.
About a year and a half.
Yeah, ages ago.
So
yeah, that one or two thing was kind of a general estimate. It wasn't intended to be a wholly accurate recounting of my past experiences. I mean, it's not like I've got a scorecard here. A number of radio shows I've appeared on. This one.
I was on Default Radio, and then it closed the next week. It was very, very disappointing.
Oh, that you were on
the
last episode.
That was my claim to fame for a while.
Last episode of Default.
Well, so now it's like second or third to last, but I was on it, and me, G.I. Joe and I believe, were on it,
because
we had call-ins, and I basically just ranted about DEF CON for a while, and then the week after that, nothing. Week after that, nothing. And it was like, oh my God, he killed it, and I was like, oops.
Yeah, I haven't actually looked at the From the Shadows thing yet, because none of the episodes are actually all that specific as to what they contain, so I wasn't sure whether the links were accurate.
Yes.
So maybe when I have copious free time, I will look at that tiny URL and
I'm going to pop a few
episode
onto the PDA. Watch them on the bus.
Oh, cool.
That's what I usually do. My little mobile media center.
Oh, sweet. Since I drive to my place of occupation during the day, I really can't do that.
Take the bus. That's what it is.
Ah, yes.
Living on the bus.
Yeah.
The bus.
Left-handed compliment, though. That left-handed compliment doesn't bother you guys, right? You're both ambidextrous. You get do the freak and the computer world.
Well, I'm ambidextrous at some points during the day, but
I think with Strom, he does the computer world sometimes and the freak world always.
That might be it.
It's a state of mind.
Yes, I am very much a computer geek. And the phone thing's just sort of branched off from that.
And I'm the other way around.
Zygmunt, actually, have you been on any radio shows, or is this your first one?
I think this is my first radio show. I'm pretty excited about it.
Wow.
Let's have a moment of congratulations.
Yay!
Oh, I feel the love. Thank you.
Heart. I'm sorry, less than three.
Anyway, that sort of wraps up the email bag. It was all iPod all the time.
Yeah.
So you will have to try these solutions. And get back to us, Strom.
I will.
Yes.
Maybe I can go on Craigslist or something and ask for iPods damaged beyond repair and try
now,
it on those.
Now, there's actually an idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fantastic idea. There we go. Project. Okay.
In fact, I think I might even post this while we're recording.
Aren't you just a wonderful multitasker?
Yes, I am.
Alt-tab.
So, anyway, let's go into show and tell. Dr. Zygmunt, what the hell have you been doing lately?
This week I had the chance to play around with this interesting website. It was a website for a sex toy shop, an online sex toy adult toy store. And they had a really interesting feature. I brought up
interested in buying sex toys, and that's how you found this website?
No, I was not. But
you weren't.
So how did you come across this website, Mr. Zygmunt?
Yeah, this is a question that needs to be answered.
Actually, I came across it because I was doing a little bit of Google mining.
Oh.
Looking for sites that might possibly be vulnerable to SQL injection.
Ah.
But
as
to get back to it.
Yeah, I'll not make my stupid joke.
But to get back to it real quick, I had a chance to try out and really work with the Firefox plugin Live HTTP headers.
Oh, that's a wonderful plugin.
Oh, it's absolutely fantastic. And what I was able to do was I put a couple items in my shopping cart. We're not going to go into what they were, but we put those couple items in. And
did they have two prongs or three prongs on the power side?
It all glowed in the dark, so it wasn't important.
Some parts
anyway, look back to your story. I'm sorry. This is just way too good to make jokes on.
But what you were able to do was if you were to change the item quantity to a negative number, the balance in the cart you could make negative. So you would actually have a negative balance in the cart, or you could even it out and have a zero balance and have like negative five vibrators and 15 double-headed dildos, and it would work out that it would be $0 or whatever it was, and they were even nice enough to throw in a free vibrator because of the size of my order.
Yes, you know, in case you were buying double-headed dildos for a whole porn set or something.
FinRev Radio, fun entertainment for the whole family.
Yeah, I'm not really that interesting, so, you know. It's not like I really own any of these.
So let's see now. Now, you were playing with the headers. So it was doing something in the HTTP headers with the quantities, or?
In the URL that was being posted.
Oh, okay. So it was okay, because I haven't played with live headers in a while, but I do remember that it really knocked my socks off. I've recently upgraded over to the alpha build, and the problem is that none of the plugins work anymore. They've started porting it over, but like a lot of my plugins have completely stopped working since I moved over to the alpha branch. And it's highly annoying.
Yeah, so for anybody who hasn't checked out the live HTTP headers, you should definitely check those out. It'll capture them while you're surfing. You can see exactly what's going on. And, you know, every now and then it's always nice to run a little an Etherroll or whatever your favorite program is, and just to see exactly what's going from your computer to the server, how the responses are working, and how you can play with them a little bit, because a lot of times people aren't set up, because, you know, that's a very easy bug to fix, you know? Just make sure you're parsing your input to make sure that there's no negative numbers. But nobody thought about it.
That's something you really should look into, and that's shame on the developer for that one. And that's something you if you're ever even thinking about moving something in production like that, you should be smacked over the head repeatedly with large mackerel.
We need a smack sound effect to randomly inject.
Yeah. Whack, whack. So yes, we will state for the record that once again that live HTTP headers rules, except I don't believe they still support the alpha build of Firefox yet, which makes me sad.
Oh, so. And as long as we're going for the record, I don't have a huge collection of sex toys.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you for pointing that out, because we were thinking that you had the big leather mask on. And so, Strom, what have you been doing, Strom? Let's go move directly over into another subject.
Yeah, well, my personal hacking story actually kind of ties into Dr. Zygmunt.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I went to TourCon this weekend, so that was a lot of fun. And one of the presentations was on something called cross-site scripting, which apparently lots of websites are vulnerable to this stuff, and you can actually...
MySpace! Sorry.
Well, no, like, the interesting thing is, the way it works is you actually don't even need to bother writing putting up your own phishing site. You actually just write your own script and then inject that into a URL... into a URL and have the person load up the real actual web page, but it runs your script at the same time, so it looks legitimate.
MySpace. Oh.
Yeah. Do you have something against MySpace, I wonder?
No, for those of you who don't know and who are playing at home, MySpace is one of those social network sites, and for the longest time, they were just... They did absolutely no input filtering, which was absolutely disgusting. I think they've cleaned up their act. I don't use them, so I don't know. But like, you could do horrible things, like insert JavaScript into insert JavaScript into your profile. So when people visit your profile, the JavaScript ones. And for those of you who don't really understand the concept of cross-site scripting, it is you visit a website and that website's running your script and attacking the user. So all their cookies that code that website back and forth are essentially yours, along with other things. And if you trust that website more, like, for example, if you say, oh, my bank is trustworthy, have the low security settings on it, if your bank somehow gets hacked, all of your security settings go right out the window because you trust that website, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Don't trust
cross-site web scripting is a very nasty, nasty thing.
Let me think. What else did I do? I also almost hit Dan Kaminsky in the head with a ping pong ball. And for that, I want a T-shirt. And, oh, speaking of T-shirts, at TourCon, there were these vendors. They were actually at DEF CON, too, where what they do is they make T-shirts on the spot. They have a plotter with a cutting blade on it, and they have a sheet of vinyl, and they cut out whatever design you want, and they put it on a T-shirt.
and it lasts just as long, even longer than silk screening, apparently. So I now have possibly the world's only Bell System T-shirt with the 1964 logo on it.
Soon to be two.
Soon to be two, yes. And actually, I guess I might as well make the shameless plug. If any of you out there are interested in such a T-shirt, send me email, and I will aggregate them together and save on shipping. Or something. Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway. we'll give their website out later. They're a cool company, so. What have I done? I forgot
the rest of my personal hacking story. Thank God for show notes. So the convention did get me interested in some more stuff, and I'm probably going to do some dabbling with SS7 and mobile phones, which, if any of you know me, I think mobile phones are actually pretty boring, but I saw some interesting stuff at TourCon. And also smart cards.
So, ooh, we can do like a smart card episode. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
People want smart card questions. Go send them in.
Yes.
Smart cards have always been really interesting. A lot of ways on just how people with nothing but money have been able to microscopically go in and attach leads and pull things out. And there's a whole article on bit flopping. And I don't know if anybody's had the chance to check that out, but what they basically do is they take the smart card and they put it underneath a really bright light. And there's some whole physics calculation that's involved to get one of the bits to flip from a 0 to a 1 or a 1 to 0. And the hope is that by doing that, you're going to destroy the security features built into the smart card and be able to download all the data right off of it.
Oops. That's awesome.
So they're doing a lot of things with smart cards right now because a lot of banks are going really into them. A lot of the stuff also applies to SIM cards. It's not the exact same technology, but it's similar.
Well, a SIM card is essentially a smart card. It's a chip on a card and has the same
specifications. Well, it's similar, but I don't believe it's identical. I believe smart cards have...
Well, there are many varieties of smart cards.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely.
We'll save this for our smart card episode to be... done at some unspecified point in the future.
Yeah, and I think we'll have Zygmunt on because apparently he knows more than both of us.
Sweet.
Oh, smart cards are nice.
Yeah, smart cards are fun. I actually dabbled in smart. My laptop has a smart card reader on it, and that's pretty cool.
That's very smart.
Yeah, it's very smart, and I can actually have, if I really wanted to, and in Windows I can have all my smart card stuff and use that to authenticate off me, which is really really weird in my opinion, and I don't use it at all. So anyway. I went to the flea, as always, as I talked about that. I did not wear a Hawaiian shirt because we thought it was going to rain, and we didn't want to actually set up a table because we thought no one was going to show up. For those of you who have never been to a flea market, if it rains, no one shows up, and therefore, you know, to pay to get in is kind of stupid for selling, that is. However, the day turned out relatively nice, and we kind of had egg on our face, but next month, third Sunday, we will... Washington 2600 will be there, and we have a laundry list of stuff we need to sell, buy, and trade. So come on down. We've given you a month's notice, so all you people from across the country, fly on over and, you know, spend the weekend and go to the flea. Yeah, that's
great
it.
Part.
Actually, our key acquisition this week was a bunch of old Athlon motherboards, not too old, they're relatively new, Athlon motherboards and processors, and a bunch of broken power supplies. But most of the motherboards and processors work, so myself, Koresh, the kids, Stalin, we're basically all going to set them up and make cases and do all kinds of nefarious things with them. That was basically our Sunday consisted of testing that, which is really fun and really boring at the same time. So, yeah, I'm not exciting. I don't have anything else to talk about. So, shall we move into the main topic?
Sounds good to me.
Think it's time?
Ooh, it's time. We should really get a intro song for the main topic.
Yeah.
Something Star Wars-y.
Yeah, we'll figure something out. If you listeners have any suggestions or things you've written, send them on in.
Yeah, so Strom can listen to them.
Yes.
So... Our show topic tonight is digital video, you know, video editing and taping and generally hack TV also. So this is all Zygmunt, because Zygmunt, in case you didn't know, I don't think we actually put that on your resume at the beginning of the show, is Zygmunt is in charge of hack TV, and so if it sucks, complain to him. And he's in charge of all that. He edits it up. And do you do a lot of the taping?
You know, for this, I only did the editing for episode 2. I've taken over the project from that point. So episode
Yes. I should have specified that. Yes, Thank did one. Zygmunt did two.
And I didn't do any of the taping for that one.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe I'm doing any of the taping for this next one because we have a couple of great submissions and we have some footage for that. Snake has been kind enough to leave to me. But really, in the next upcoming episodes, I'll end up getting behind the camera and doing a lot more of that. But as it's been now, I've just been the man behind the computer.
Oh, great. Well, that means that's the people you don't run into, you don't actually see, but they're the people who get the stuff done. I know, because I was in TV club in high school. Yeah. Back in the day, I was actually one of the first people to probably ever use a digital editing system.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. It was a computer-based analog system.
That's our tax dollars hard at work.
Yeah, yeah. That is what it is. Quite a killer show. But anyway, okay, let's start off beginning. What the hell is digital video?
All right. I guess when you're going to mention digital video, it's really important to talk about the difference between digital versus analog. Most of the television that you get in your house is going to be based off of an analog signal. Now, the difference mainly between an analog and a digital signal is that analog will measure small fluctuations in whatever medium is being used to send the signal. Perfect example is your AM and FM radio. That's amplitude modulation or frequency modulation, and that's just small changes in that specific medium. As opposed to digital, which takes that small fluctuation and actually quantifies it into a number and uses that to send the signal. The main difference being when you have an analog signal, you have a lot of noise that can be from just background radiation, heat, electrical interference, or anything like that, and all of those are going to make small changes to the analog signal. It's going to affect the sound. As opposed to with digital, you're going to end up with, even if you have something that's a small effect, it's not going to change from the number 0 to the number 1, because whatever it's closer to is what the digital medium is going to say that it is. That's just the nice little intro to the difference between analog and digital. When we're talking about digital video from like the Hack TV perspective, it's the nice gift-wrapped, codected up, all that jazz slapped onto somewhere where you can download and watch it on your computer for the most part.
Where do I get the gift-wrapped version? I never actually got that one.
I'm sorry?
Where do I get the gift-wrapped version?
The gift-wrapped version? That's going to be episode 34. Is going to be gift wrapped.
Ooh, but I can't wait. When's that going to get released? Like 30-50?
Yeah, something like that. At the rate we're going.
Well, you guys are turning it out relatively. I mean, the 1-2 is a big thing, but 3's in the works. We'll get into that later. We'll talk about release dates and everything.
Absolutely.
So okay, well we now know the difference between digital and analog. So basically, analog would be like an old VHS tape, and digital would really be like something downloading off the internet or a DVD player.
Or a CD or anything like that.
Yeah, CD. CD is another good one. Okay, so now that we covered that, how the hell did you get into this? I mean, did you go to school about this? Or are you elite video hacksaw?
Actually, my claim to fame is not video. But I did at one point, I went to a middle school that was a performing arts middle school. I actually went in as a photography special student. They actually have magnet programs in Florida where I live. So I was a photography magnet student. I was doing a lot of work in the lab with, enlargers and all that jazz. And I'm much more of an instant gratification kind of guy. So I started playing with the digital.
Amen.
Exactly. I started playing with Photoshop, was my first experience into the whole digital foray. And then from there, the natural evolution is just to go up through video, and then everything else has just been on my own, just playing with it. Every now and then, hey, I'll give you $100 to do this or whatever. You never know who you're going to come across, and it's really just been a great stepping stone. It's helped got me some money, which is always nice.
Always a plus, always a plus.
And that's where that comes from.
So just make me feel old here for a second. So what year did you start playing with Photoshop?
I started playing with Photoshop at version 3.0. So I'm not sure what year that is. It's probably...
That's going to be about late, early 90s, I think.
I want to say right around 92, 93, but don't quote me on that.
So how old are you right now, just out of curiosity?
Oh, I'm 22.
Okay. So okay, you're not one of those young whippersnappers that we have, you know, hanging out around us. So that's
no,
always
I'm not that quite young.
Yeah, I don't feel compelled to go and buy things like Rogaine at the drugstore now.
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna get into the hair losing situation another time, but you know.
So Photoshop was pretty cool. So what do you use to kind of Photoshop? I mean, is stuff for photos, obviously. Photoshop
for images. Absolutely.
Yeah. What the heck do you use for video?
Really, one of the main programs that I have used for the actual editing, we're not talking about converting in codecs, which we'll actually talk about next, but the main program that I'll use just for my editing is going to be Adobe Premiere. I mean, Adobe really has, and I hate to say this about a company that charges so much for their software, but they really have really done a great job with their anything that's digital artwork, I guess is the way to say it. But Adobe Premiere has been an excellent product. I use Adobe Premiere Pro. They have several versions of that out. And I actually went up and made a tiny URL because you can download it. But we'll get into that when we get to the very end as to things that you might need to collect. But Adobe Premiere Pro, it's a Windows product. It's the only reason I still have Windows on my computer. And I guess now might be a good time to also talk about the Linux options. I've looked at a couple of them, but they really just haven't struck me as anything that stands out. But I believe Black Ratchet and Strom, you guys had a little bit to say about that, the Linux aspect?
Well, we've been fooling around with a couple of projects that we've been doing. Nothing for public consumption. Don't get yourself excited. And we were looking at a software program called Cinerella, and it's I don't know the URL off the top of my head.
Cinerella, not Cinerella.
Cinerella? I always thought like a Cinerella, so it's kind of like a...
Yeah, not like the fairy tale character.
Cinderella. copyright infringement. No, fair use. So, how do you pronounce it? Do you remember how to spell it? Because I sure as heck don't.
I think it's Cinerella.
Yeah. No, Cinderella.
No, Cinerella. That's yes.
You confuse me. So anyway. No, it's Cinerella, and that's heroinwarrior.com, and heroin with an E. So let me go tiny URL that. So that's the Linux one. We've never actually fooled around with it, but we're going to start playing with it. So you don't use this, Zygmunt?
You know, I really, and as much as I love Linux, all my systems are Linux. It's just that specific program, I mean, for this specific media, this industry, is not really developed on Linux. And for a long time, it wasn't even developed for Windows. It was all really done for Mac. But as things have changed, you know, as time's grown on, and Microsoft and the IBM-compatible computer has really taken more of a hold, everything has started to move over to there. I would love to see a nice open-source port of something like Adobe Premiere that has all the power that Adobe Premiere has, and we'll get into some of the effects later, but I just haven't seen that product for Linux, and it breaks my heart, but you got to do what you got to do, right?
Yeah, so anyway, the tiny URL I was talking about is tinyurl.com/5SierraPapaBravoZulu. So, well, what makes Adobe Premiere so great? Why can't we use, what makes you think Adobe Premiere is so great?
Yes, it is absolutely my opinion.
Well,
I don't
course,
want to say
obviously.
Anything bad about all the people who've worked really hard, I'm sure, on the other Linux versions. I'm sure they're excellent products. A lot of it just comes down to it's what I've worked with, it's what I'm used to, I know how to use it, and then there are just certain features that certain plugins that have only been written for Premiere Pro. We'll talk about Steadicam a little later. We'll talk about keyframing and things like that a little later that really just are smoothest in Premiere because they've just been doing it longer. They have a little bit more experience, and, you know, it's the almighty dollar. They have a lot more money to spend on developing this software.
Well, of course. I mean, you can always say the almighty dollar and everything, but, of course, there's also Linux alternatives out there, and I'll figure out Cinerella. I just need a better computer to actually print it on because I think, if I remember correctly, it's a bit of a hog. So, okay.
We'll have to play with it.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, we'll all have to play with it. And basically, Adobe Premiere, you have a free download, but of course...
And I have that tiny URL for you now. You can actually download a trial version. That's going to be tinyurl.com/2NBUM. I don't know what that is in fancy talk.
Okay, so is that 2 November Bravo Uniform Mic?
Yes, that's exactly correct.
All right, see, look at
and
that.
And
even
you can download that free trial of Adobe Premiere Pro.
How long is your free trial for?
I think it's 30 days, but don't quote me on that. It might be 15. I'm not exactly sure on that. So
Adobe wants its money. Look at it that way. Adobe is a bit of a Adobe products. They're expensive, but they're almost always worth it. I love PDF as a developer. Look at it that way. And the PDF is all kinds of stuff. So okay, so we have a show we want to edit. So just let's start of walking through it, and so let's see. We have all the shows. How does Hack TV work?
All right, we'll jump into a couple of specific attributes of Hack TV, things that we had to do for that one. For Hack TV 2 that everybody got to see, it was an excellent episode in my personal humble opinion, and there were a lot of things that the end users really didn't have to see and deal with that really became part of it and why a program like Adobe Premiere Pro is really going to help in something like this. One of the first things is a lot of the segments are filmed by Stank. He does a great job, but he has, I don't know what he's got, some sort of disease that he shakes like crazy. Every time he's taking the videos. And I'm sure, you know, he's underground. You know, he's trying not to get caught doing whatever. But
rappelling off
that,
the sides of buildings. And
didn't they
taking down the Kremlin
quarter feature that gets rid of that?
Well, the first thing that we used is a filter. It's a plug-in by the name of Steadicam, and, you know, forgive me, I don't know the name of the people who make it, but what it basically does is it looks at the shake and takes some of the shake out. Basically, the trade-off you make is sometimes the images are a little sharp and a little grainy. I'm sure you guys saw that, especially in the remote terminal part. You can see how sometimes it's a little sharp, it's a little grainy, and that's because of that specific filter we had to use.
I actually did notice that. I just thought it was a codec problem.
Nope, that's exactly the reason why, is because of this filter. That's the side effect. It's more or less it's the price you pay to steady up your video. So the lesson
is... There's always trade-off.
Exactly. Another thing that we really had to use was you saw a lot of the blurring. Blurring in Adobe Premiere Pro and every program in the world is the hugest pain in the ass that you can possibly imagine. You know, you see it in cops all the time when they, like, blur faces.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot harder than it looks. But what you can do is you can make the computer work for you. It has to do with maths and keyframes we'll get into right now, I guess, is a great time. Basically what you do, we'll take one segment, was the numbers and the data that was right above the remote terminal. It was those orange and brown letters that you couldn't see because they were blurred out. The first thing we do on a segment like that is we take basically a white box, we put it right on top of that, of whatever it is we're going to cover, and we use what's called keyframing. My method, and some people will disagree, is I do first thing, I do a frame that covers it in the very beginning, and you have to do this frame by frame. In the very beginning, we'll cover it, and then at the very end, we'll cover it again. And then I'll split it in half, and then I'll find that place that covers it. I'll split that in half again, and I'll find a point that covers it. And you keep doing that. And by doing that enough times, the theory is you're going to let the computer do the work for you. These are what keyframes are. It's a key point that I'm telling the computer, I want you to move my mat, which is my little white box, from point A to point B, and you're going to do the work for me. So instead of me having to sit there for 29.97 frames per second, I can just have the computer move it around for me.
29.97. Can't they just round that up to 30?
Yeah, can you explain the whole 29.97 frame thing at some point? Because that's always confused me.
We'll get into the frame rates and stuff like that.
All right.
Just to finish up the blur real quick, is once you have that white box that clears everything out, you go ahead and you cut it out into a separate segment, and that's your mat. You take a copy of the original segment, and you blur that using usually mosaic or pixelate or anything that's going to really crystallize and make it unviewable. Then you go ahead and you drag back in your other segment so that you have your mat and everything in the same little image lineup, your video lineup. Then you go ahead and you apply your track mat filter and a couple other things that you can really easy see online. It's tough to explain it. But once you set all those filters up, then you go ahead and you get the blur and you get that nice moving blur that's always nice to see. And that really is the main reason why HackTV 2 took so long to get out there, is because all those blurs,
yeah.
Even though I can keyframe it, I still have to go through and watch it frame by frame by frame. That 3-minute or 4-minute segment that you all saw was easily 2 weeks worth of work just to get that in there. And that's
just,
not counting.
Just for 3 minutes of blurring?
Absolutely. And then when we'll talk about rendering a little later, but you're really getting to painstaking and mind-numbing work. And it's really, could you imagine having to actually do it frame by frame? It's the beauty of keyframes. And
so,
that kind of covers that.
So that's like 8 steps. No kidding, right? How each in those 8 steps take about just a couple of days each, and wow.
Well,
I'm sorry, I'm
really
just kind of impressed.
The thing that really takes a while is just to move that mat around.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier, of course, with people's faces because you can blur out a lot more. But when you have something that's a pretty specific size, you have to rotate it when the camera turns. You have to move it from side to side. You have to make it larger and smaller when people zoom in and zoom out. And, I mean, as much as I really like Stink, you know, it just wasn't something that was considered while it was done. And
yeah.
It's one of the main reasons why it just took so long to get together.
We're going to start the Get Stank a tripod fund.
He does a good job with it, though. We all like him.
Oh yeah, we all do like him. And you know, it's you basically, even if you say that Stank sucks, you probably do the same exact thing unless you have hands like a surgeon. Trust me.
Absolutely.
So, how fast is your computer that does this?
My computer at home, and this is, we're going to get into rendering here. It looks like
okay.
When my computer at home, and I love my setup. It's dual monitors, which makes it a lot easier, especially for video editing. It's a 2.8. I have a gigabyte of RAM, a 500 gigabyte hard drive that I use for the video editing. It's a RAID 0. You guys want to talk about RAID real quick? What exactly that is?
A quick introduction to RAID for people would be a RAID 0 is basically you take 2 hard drives and your computer sees them as 1 hard drive. So instead of 2 250 gig hard drives, you'd have 1 500 gig hard drives.
And it's faster, right? It's stripes.
Yes, it's faster because what your computer can do is your computer can read from 2 hard drives at once. So it says, hard drive 1, get me data A, and hard drive 2, get me data B. And it can have data A and B all at once.
And that really, that helps with the rendering.
Yeah.
I have that 500 gigabyte hard drive, the 2.8.
I'm not sure if RAID 0 does that, to be honest with you. I know RAID 1 does that.
It might be RAID 1, you know, I don't really know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Whatever
anyway.
The one that stripes is. But and to render a scene that was as complex as that remote terminal where you had various blurs, something like that, even on that computer, took at least, I think it was 9.5 hours to render. And what rendering is it's taking every single frame and applying all the effects that you spent all that time doing and spitting it out as a whatever format you tell it to spit it out in.
Wow.
And this is really where you get into clustered computers. You look at a movie like Titanic. Everybody
yeah, because I don't think that's
add.
Done on a P4.
Well, that's actually done on a cluster. That was done on a whole series of computers that were connected together because it got to the point where, you know what, they ran out of money and they didn't want to keep throwing money at this problem, so they basically took a whole bunch of regular computers. You know, maybe they're only 1 gigahertz, 2 gigahertz. I'm not sure on the exact details about it, but they created what's called a rendering farm. And a lot of that goes into, what are they called, Beowulf clusters?
Beowulf clusters, yes.
How do those work?
Well, what Beowulf clusters are basically I have a desktop computer, and I have another desktop computer, and I have another desktop computer. And all these computers work independently. And what a Beowulf computer is a Linux, I wouldn't call it a distribution, but it's the brief time I used it, which is like back in like 1999, I had a nice big stack of 486s that were being retired. And I recently read about it. So what it was is you have one computer that was designated a master computer that was in charge of all the clustering. And, like, for example, you take all the computers and you plug them all into the network. And what it is you need to actually have a nice big fat pipe for this, because what you're going to do on it is, because you're transferring gobs and gobs of data, and you want to do it really, really fast. So there's one computer that's a master, and then you have, like, X computers that are a slave. And what you do is you boot all these computers up with a specialized floppy disk that I had. And it all looks for the master, and it talks to the master. And what the master does is basically you give the master a task, and it just distributes a load between all of the slave machines. So what it is you're splitting the load up. Instead of having one computer work on it all the time, you're having eight computers work on it all the time. So therefore, you're going to be about, you know, eight times as faster, give or take. There's overhead involved, so. And plus, eight computers is nothing on the cluster. What was that supercomputer cluster down on, like, University of Virginia?
It has
1,500 Mac G3s in it, and they're all, like, dual cores and or dual processor or something. And it's just row upon row of these, not G3s, like G5s or something. The X-Servs, that's what they were. The X-Servs, when they first came out, they had a delay because the University of Virginia bought 1,500 of them. Like, they took their entire inventory that Apple had, their itty-bitty one, and they say, make us all of this stuff. And they all just clustered them together. So it's this incredible supercomputing complex. And it's a whole lot cheaper than actually getting a supercomputer to do it.
So basically you just have a whole bunch of processors that you're just getting nothing but raw bone crunching power out of it, right?
Exactly. They don't do anything else except the tasks you tell them to.
What I actually did is
I did some very basic on my cluster of 486s was some very basic computer graphics work, like 3D modeling and everything, POV ray and whatnot.
I mean, that's an excellent example of what you would really, and this is one of those things that clusters are more and more. I think Madagascar was another movie that was made almost entirely on clusters because it's so much cheaper to have, you know, 100 one gigahertz computers than it is to really invest in that supercomputer that's going to be obsolete in who knows how long.
Mm-hmm. I believe the biggest cluster that I can always think of is the people over at Pixar who do Disney's computer graphics work. They have room upon room of computers. I believe they're Intel. I'm not sure exactly what their specs are. But the funny story I heard about them is they lost the air conditioning unit one day, and it was a mad scramble to shut them all off because within 15 minutes, the computer room went from a balmy 63 degrees or so all the way up to 110, and that was 15 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, that actually happened at my office one time. We had a data center across from my office and on the same floor of the building, and the air conditioning unit broke, and literally we walked in there and we were, for the next 10 minutes, running around madly trying to – we couldn't shut any of these systems down. You know, we had to madly find fans, and we were busy trying to blow cool air into the room and circulate the hot air out of the room. And
yeah, that's one of those oh shit moments.
Mm-hmm.
What a mental picture.
Oh yeah, I wasn't actually there when it happened, but I believe we had a similar situation like that in our server room, and it was interesting from the stories I heard. And it was basically, you know, either shut the computers off or point fans at them.
Well, I guess now would be as good a time as any to go into, as long as you're talking about raw processing power, to go into exactly what codecs are.
Okay, what are codecs?
All right, I'm sure, what's a codec that everybody knows about? You have the MPEG-4, you have DivX, anything else that you guys could think of?
Oh, DivX, MPEG, AVI.
Well, I've seen various codecs on AVI, so I think AVI is more of a file format spec than the
other. Yeah, AVI is a file format, isn't
it? QuickTime, of course, is the big one.
QuickTime, yep.
And
anyway, there's tons out there. H.264, that's the new one that's coming out.
Basically, you know, take a bag of 1,000 marbles, and for each one, there's a codec.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Well, what a lot of these codecs are doing, and I guess we'll hit the audio part of it real quick, something like MP3. MP3 is a little bit different than a lot of the other codecs, but what MP3 does is it's what's called a lossy codec. And what that means is that you're willing to lose some data, or in this case some music, in order to compress the file. What MP3 does is, and don't quote me on the exact range of human hearing, but I think it's something like 16 or 8 hertz up to like 10,000 hertz, or, you know, don't quote me on the exact figure. But what MP3 does is it will really chop out anything that the human ear can't hear. So basically you're losing that data, which is why a lot of times if you make a CD out of MP3 and you try to play it in your car, you don't really feel the music as if you would if you were in a regular, or if you were just playing a regular store-bought CD. You get around that with bit rates and things like that, but that's an excellent definition of a lossy codec.
And speaking of codecs, now that you're talking about audio, is another wonderful example for us as a shameless plug is the codecs that we used during our Asterisk presentation. Same concept. It's basically you cut little bits out of the data, and the smaller they are, the more they sound like crap.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, what video does is standard video is recorded in RGB, which is red, green, and blue. You know, those are the three primary colors that are involved in video. And what happens in when you're using a codec on a video is you actually convert it into what's called YCBCR, and that's a color format. The Y is for luma, which is short for the illumination, the brightness, basically.
How do they get Y for that?
I have no idea where that comes from, to be honest.
I'll just call it L, LBCBR.
I'm sure L was taken.
What?
And then you have the CBCR, which is the chroma, which is the actual color. You know, how much red, how much green, how much yellow, what exactly is this color made up of. And from there, they go ahead and they do a process is called chroma subsampling, and that is what changes the RGB into YCBCR. From there, you really end up with a lot of downsampling, which is the lossy codecs. That's where you get into a lot of that. And then from there, it's broken down into what are called macro blocks. Those are usually those 16 by 16 blocks. Sometimes you have different sizes, but 16 by 16 is pretty standard. And what that really is just doing is it's taking your big image and it's breaking it down into smaller pieces. And those smaller pieces are what's going to actually be encoded into video. And if you ever look, if you've ever downloaded a video that you were legally allowed to download.
Like Hack TV.
Absolutely, although this doesn't happen with Hack TV. But something that's of a lot something that's of a lot lower quality, if you see a scene and it cuts to another scene and then you see the blocks on your computer screen, that's exactly what you're seeing. Those blocks that don't quite fit, they're a different color, or they look like they're from the last scene. A lot of that. Exactly. And a lot of that is also because of what's called motion compensation.
I feel smart by knowing that one.
Exactly. And what motion compensation really comes from, and this is really what's going to save you a lot of data and a lot of space on a file, is if you have a video and it's a picture of a guy and his dog on the beach throwing a frisbee, the sky is always going to be blue, the clouds are more or less going to be in the same place, the ocean's going to be blue, and the sand is going to be, I don't know, white, yellow, whatever color you want to call it. And the computer knows this. The computer says, hey, don't change this stuff, okay? Just leave it up there for the most part. But you also see that you have this guy who's running. He's throwing his frisbee, and the dog is catching it. This is the actual motion that you need to be continually rendering. So what a computer is saying and what the codecs are doing are saying, you know what? You don't need to render this whole frame every single time. You just really need to update what's changing, and that is really where a lot of the compression has really come from. They have fancy words for that, like discrete cosine transform and the quantizing of everything and the entropy encoding, but basically, this is where you're really going. And then from there, you have your completed, your nice, happy MPEG file, and by you having the codecs on your computer that you need to view this specific codec or this specific file, you're doing the exact process, but you're doing it in opposite. You're taking the quantized packets, you're taking all the data, and you're just turning it back into an image. You're going to lose some quality because, you know, it was compressed. It's smaller. But the idea, as codecs get better and better and computers get more and more powerful, is that you're finding better similarities between things. You're finding different ways of representing the actual colors and the data. And that's where a lot of the changes come in when it comes to a codec.
So basically what it boils down to is the smaller the granularity and the more frequent the updates, the bigger the file is.
Well, basically, yeah, that's really going to do it for you. If you shoot, if you can use the same codec on two different movies that are exactly the same size, one of them is the picture of just paint drying on a wall, and the other one is some high-speed, high-action car chase, that high-speed, high-action car chase is going to be a bigger file because there's more data because you're not going to be able to do that motion compensation. You're not going to have just the constant color. Every time something's updated is when it's written back into the data of the codec.
Mm, that's pretty cool. And I got to say, I love watching paint dry. Seriously, the best part is when it congeals. I'm owner of the Time Life Classics of Paint Drying Volumes 10 through 13.
I prefer Grass Grow TV.
That is a good one. Yeah, I got to admit. I don't get that on my cable, though.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I got to download those episodes. It's been, I feel guilty on that. So, wow. That's pretty interesting. How hard is all this stuff? I mean, obviously, I don't think I can sit down on my P3 733 here and do it. But if, for example, if I had a fast computer, can I do it?
Well, you know what? Even if you have a slow computer, you can still do it. The only price you're going to pay is, you know what? It might take 3 days to render that scene. It's not unheard of. I've had, not for Hack TV, but I've had projects before where it sat rendered for seriously an entire week. And if your computer's slower, I mean, that's just the price you pay. You really, I guess if you're going to say minimum system requirements to not want to bang your head against the wall, I'd probably say a 1.5. RAM is key here, because the more RAM you have, the better things are going to move for you while you're actually doing the editing. But we're probably looking at something like right around 500 megabytes of RAM and a 1.5 gigahertz machine, and you can definitely do this at home. There's a million excellent tutorials out there that tell you how to do specific things, like how do I get that matrix effect, and how do I blur his face, and how do I use the brightness and contrast filters and all that jazz. But
How do I be like Neo?
Yeah, that stop bullet animation. They tell you how to do things like that, how you can move around.
Really?
But it's more, yeah, you can do stuff like that. You need more than one camera to do it.
Well, yeah, I think that's kind of complicated. That's not all Adobe Premiere for you.
No, but we're talking more about that scrolling green text going on top of things. Because, like in The Matrix, they had the scene, I guess in the first one, at the very end, where they see the agents, and they're standing in the hallway, and they have the green text flowing over them. Something like that is very easy to do in Adobe Premiere. It just takes, you know, you just got to know what you're doing. You got to have a couple of clicks, this and that. And, it's not that difficult. And we really like to see a lot of people doing it.
Wow. Okay. Holy crap. I had no clue about any – a good 90% of the conversation, I had no clue about it. I'm thoroughly enlightened.
What's
the phone?
You guys are teaching me about phones, so it's a fair trade-off.
There we go. We're enlightening people, and you're enlightening people, so we can enlighten people together.
Nice.
So I guess the big question on everyone's lip is, when is Hack TV 3 coming out?
Oh, Hack TV 3. Really, what we're targeting for is a late September, early October release.
Wow, that fast?
Yeah. I'm just waiting on a couple more clips. A couple things from Stank, maybe. I got a couple of user-submitted clips. Especially, we have one from Booter that's coming out that I just want to say hello to Booter. You know, I really appreciate you doing this recording and sending it to me, because that means I don't have to record it. But there's a couple more clips we're waiting. I've always had a deal, and I guess now's a great time to say it, for anybody who wants to submit something to Hack TV. The deal has always been this. I'm not going to do anything that's going to make you look bad. I'm not going to do anything that's going to get you in trouble. I really need it to be sent to me in a raw DVD, if you can do it, which is basically means no codecs, uncompressed video, uncompressed audio. That way we can get that nice high quality that Hack TV has. Any editing that I do, I will always send the clip back to you before it's included. So you will see the clip, your own clip, as it's edited, as it will appear. And if you have a problem with it, you know, hey, you know, that part's a little shady, I don't know if I want to see that, and whatever, whatever, I'm more than happy to work with you on it. A great place to upload them so that you don't have to use your own bandwidth is ftp.binrev.com/incoming. I have access to that thanks to Nick84. You know, I appreciate that.
Yeah, Nick set that up. He's a good guy.
He's definitely a good guy. But really, submit, you know, and I hate to do this whole episode on how to edit video, but please don't edit the video that you're going to send to me.
Well, I mean, you know, we're talking about Hack TV, but at the same point, if this is more of, well, we'll be happy if you send stuff up for Hack TV, but if you want to do a show on stamp collecting, I don't know what other people do a TV show on. This is the stuff you got to learn. If you want to do something on this, you know, don't feel free to submit your stuff to Hack TV. But if you think Hack TV sucks, go for the gold. Do it yourself.
I'm going to steal a line from Jason Scott just for a second. He says, and for any of you who don't know, he does the BBS documentary. He says that he hopes that the BBS documentary that he put together is the worst BBS documentary that ever comes out. And I feel the exact same way about Hack TV. I hope Hack TV is the worst hack show that ever comes out because there's going to be a million more and they're just going to kick my ass.
I can just say so many bad things right here, but I'm not.
I bought a copy of that.
Kevin Rose.
So,
oh, jeez. God, did I just... I got this cold. Kevin Rose.
So,
but,
okay.
Well, I mean, you're talking about you submitting stuff to Hack TV. What kind of stuff do you want?
Really, anything that you think that could really be of interest to other hackers, people who are of the same mindset. It doesn't have to be you sitting in front of a computer, you know, hacksering the Gibson. Although, you know, that would be
interesting. I don't know. My Gibson's pretty lead.
You have the full 3D graphics for directory
transfer. Yeah, I like fly over the file system. It's pretty sweet.
But just anything that's maybe you're not even thinking about it as something that hackers would be really interested in. But if it's going to teach people something, it's going to be information that's not that commonly known that people had to go out there and figure out. You know, that anything like that is an absolutely excellent segment. Something that really makes you look at it and be like, you know what, that's something that's very interesting. I wish I would have thought of that. Anything like that. And even if you don't want to do a Hack TV segment, and I hate to jump off this topic again, even if you're going to put together, what's for example, the old WAPIX videos. A lot of those were just done by Homeboy A, who, you know, let me teach somebody how to use this tool. If you come up with a tool or you have a new way of using Nmap, you can make a quick little video. You can edit it up in Adobe Premiere. A great screen capture program. Have either of you guys used this? It's called Wink.
No,
I've
never used
that?
It. Don't think I've used it, no.
That's a free open source program for Linux and Windows. They have both versions. And that basically is an excellent screen capture utility. And you know what? If you want to do a screen capture and send it into Hack TV, it's definitely going to be at least considered. I mean, we're definitely not going to be elitist about it. If you got something cool, we definitely want to see it. Anything new, anything that, you know, maybe everybody knows how to do it, but when was the last time somebody showed what it was like to do with something that's crazy that's like that? Tandem stacking.
Yeah, exactly.
When was the last time anybody's done it? How many of us in our lives have actually seen it done or heard the sound of tandem stacking other than Strom?
Well, those are available on phonetrips.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we'll just sort of toss that plug out there, and that sort of answers my next question of like, you know, I don't have a video camera. I mean, how can I help? And I'm going to look into this Wink program, and maybe I can do some crazy thing, and you can listen to me narrate while I move my mouse across the screen and go, yeah, I'm elite. I can move a mouse.
And you can make your own music behind it with something like Adobe Audiology or Fruity Loops, I believe is the name of the program. It's an excellent little mixing program.
I believe Adobe's program is called
Audition. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies. Yes.
Yeah. But there's also another one out there. Free is... Oh, I'm completely drawing a blank, and I feel
Audacity?
Audacity, thank you. And that's what Stank uses to edit Stank used to use to edit the show for Hack Radio for this, you know, Bin Rev Radio. God, I can't talk
about
it. Exactly. who is this? Okay, let's just get the that download again for Adobe Premiere. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
I think the only one more thing that I want to mention is the program that I usually use because I really like this one. The one that I usually use to convert between formats, I really happen to recommend Ultra AVI Converter. It is a Windows program. It just kind of fits in with the whole motif. You can get it from download.com. I know they have a free 30-day trial, but it's inhibited. You really just got to pay for it and get it. But that really can handle a whole slew of different kinds of codecs that you're going to need to go in and out of. And the whole DivX Pro suite is an excellent other program for converting things to the DivX format, which is one of the greatest compressions that you're really going to be able to see in today's world. You have to pay for it by putting that DivX logo on your images, but it's a great codec if you're going to be sharing things.
And if you want, I believe you can get around to that if you actually pay for the codec. But
oh, really?
I believe that's thoroughly out of anybody's price range around here.
I have no idea. I didn't even know you could buy the codec.
I thought you could buy the codec. Perhaps I'm wrong. Send your emails in, radio@binrev.com.
Other than that, that kind of... I'm trying to, you guys have any more questions about it? Anything interesting about video ever confounded you?
I gotta say, I haven't actually ever played around with this, but it's kind of interesting now. I'm going to have to, I'll go do some leet things. I'll go edit all my porn clips together or something. Oh, did I say that out loud?
Anyway.
So.
Yeah, man, I'm thoroughly impressed.
Yeah, I gotta say, this has been one of our best episodes so far. Thank you.
Oh, I feel the love, guys. Thank you.
Yeah. Wow, I've got to get you here more on. So, yeah, that's everything you ever want to know about digital editing and you were scared to find out by Dr. Zygmunt.
Oh, I feel the love. A lot of it's thanks to the wiki. Thank you, wiki.
What wiki are we talking about?
Pimp your wiki.
The wiki. the wiki encyclopedia. Thing that'll give you a lot of the actual specifics, like the difference between PAL and NTSC, the actual numbers behind things.
That Wikipedia, wikipedia.org.
Yes.
Yes, which is a great resource for basically everything. It's lots of fun to hang around. Like, for example, I found last week way too much information about The Price is Right. There is a whole slew of information on there, and it's like, 2 or 3 pages worth.
The price is always right on Hack TV.
Yeah, Wikipedia is great for all of your information knowing needs and a lot of stuff you never really want to know in the first place.
All right.
All right. Well, Dr. Zygmunt, do you have any announcements?
As far as announcements go, just really be on the lookout for Hack TV Episode 3 coming up soon. I hope to get it out. It's really looking like the first or second week in October, but don't hold me to that. It might be a little bit later, depending on anything that needs to be edited. From that, just really what I want people to take from this is to make videos and go ahead and present things at your local meetings. Maybe you're scared, you don't want to talk in front of people. Here's an excellent way to bring something to the meeting. Hey, here's a screen capture I did of me doing some SQL injection. If you're that kind of person that just doesn't like to talk in front of people, this is an excellent way. Let's put some clips together. You know, maybe we'll start something online where we can all just share them together and do it for your local meetings. You know, that's where you're really going to get to talk to people, get those ideas flowing, and all that great stuff.
Much like we talked about last week, go to your damn meetings.
Yes. I go to 3.
I go to 2. You're 1 up on me. What a shame.
Aha. Owned.
No news. Oh, I have some announcements. I really kind of said this meeting the show, but I'll be at Vaughn tomorrow, and I might be there other times during the week. But Boston 2600, a couple of friends are going over there, and yeah, that's about it for me. I don't have any other announcements.
Yeah, I don't think I have any announcements either. Just kind of been at TorCon and having a good time. But I guess can do my shouts.
Yeah, I'll start you. Do your shouts.
Yeah, I'll give a shout to Stoner Savant from the BinRev forums for putting me up and putting up with me during TorCon. Thank you very much, man.
Dr. Zygmunt?
Oh, I'll jump in with a couple of shouts. Let me give a shout-out to the whole BinRev 561. You've got a great group of guys that's being organized by Tabiz. He's really doing a great job with that. Good friend of mine, RM Pants, Booter, I mentioned him already, but he's helping out with some Hack TV stuff. Tecosti, he's always there fixing all my code that I mess up. And, you know, I figured I'd throw this in since this is my first radio show. Hi, Mom, if you're listening, how you doing? What's up? Mm-hmm. Other than that, that's...
Do you really think your mom is going to be listening to Hack...
Hey, my parents. My parents came to the Asterisk talk.
Yeah. But I know my parents were shocked when I said, oh, yeah, I have a radio show. A real radio show? No, it's on the Internet. Oh. But it's listened to a couple of thousand people. Huh?
Yeah.
Oh,
and a shout as well to I forgot his name. The guy who does the radio show in Vegas.
that guy that does that radio show. Because there's only one of them in Las Vegas.
The usual suspect in Vegas. Yeah, no, I was on it with Mark Spencer. I forgot his name suddenly.
I believe it's theusualsuspects.com. KLAV.
Yes, on KLAV. Whatever his name is, I've totally forgotten it, but he bought me lunch, so he rocks.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
let's see. I don't have any shouts. I'll send out shouts to Boston 2600, shouts to Pound Bin Rev, shouts to Dr. Zygmunt for doing an excellent episode. I got to say, if this was your first time, your second time is going to really kick ass.
He wins our applause.
Hey!
Thank you very much for having me, guys. It's an absolute pleasure. I hope to have a chance to do it again.
Judging from your performance this week, that'll be not a problem.
I feel the love.
Site of the week, Strom, take it away.
Yeah, it's just a vendor I encountered at TourCon, actually. Their site is lbgfx.com. They do custom T-shirts and stickers and whatnot. You give them designs, and they cut them out of vinyl, and you get really cool cutout stickers. And they can
they'll do anything.
Yeah, I got myself a Bell System T-shirt.
Well, I was thinking more of, I forget who it was. Someone at DEF CON, right? For those of you who weren't paying attention during Black Hat 2005, there was a bit of a Cisco problem with censorship and such. And people were going around all the time with new and even wilder fuck Cisco T-shirts. So it was kind of cool. They will print anything. Email, radio@binrev.com. Yeah, we previously announced the episode this week, and no one emailed any video editing questions for Dr. Zygmunt. I'm
surprised.
I'm very disappointed in you all.
Yes,
it's very
sad. What? As long as we're doing that, let me just put out my email address if anybody has a specific question.
Ahead. Yeah.
I'm sure it's not going to be that inundated, but if you ever need to contact me, have questions about HackTV, you can reach me at drzygmunt@bellsouth.net.
Dot net.
It's dot net. There you go. It's just drzygman at bellsouth.net.
That's drzygman for all of you people listening in Britain, Australia.
All right.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if I actually gave out the address. radio@binrev.com. Email us. And you can email us questions, and I will forward along to Dr. Zygmunt in case you can't spell and you don't know what Z means. closing music tonight is Greenlander by Pavement, which was one of the top downloaded songs on epitonic.com, as always. Because I just go in there and randomly check stuff out and say, that sounds like pretty good closing music, so we'll just check that out. We will see you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.